Hello, my name is Sam Dunnewald, and I am the host of Dice Exploder, the Emmy-nominated podcast all about RPG design right here on the Many-Sided Network. And after years of interviews and ideation with some of the best designers in RPGs, my first print game is coming to Kickstarter. Band-Aids and Bullet Holes, a John Wick-inspired game about getting your bloody revenge. Band-Aids and Bullet Holes is a game about standing in the shadow of a skyscraper in the pouring rain, bathed in bubblegum neon and someone else's blood, staring down at the man who ruined your life all those years ago, raising the barrel of a gun and asking, "Will you pull the trigger?" Band-Aids and Bullet Holes is a one-shot capsule game box set deck builder RPG, and you can follow it right now on Kickstarter. Back Band-Aids and Bullet Holes on May 5th.
And welcome everybody to the Electric State, the Path to Dawn season recap, where we're going to go over just our initial thought, our overall thoughts on the whole season, the system, playing with each other and everybody's arc and all that good stuff. And we're going to talk about, you know, what happens next? What happened to Catherine after? What happened to Luke? He got a really nice, he got a nice plot of plot in a graveyard somewhere.
No, probably.
Yeah, and we got some questions from a few listeners as well. So we're gonna, and we have our own questions that we're just going to discuss. But yeah, the first thing that we want to go over is just like, how is everybody feeling now that it's over? You know, we did 10 episodes. And I felt personally like it ended on a good, like, cathartic note. But what do you guys, just on the overall, on the season, how did you think it went? Like the ups and the downs, the arcs. Did you feel like you finished your arc or completed it or something? So anybody can go, whoever wants to go.
I would say definitely like a bittersweet feeling finishing the series because it was so fun from the start of our journey up until the end. And then with how it ended, it was like, yes, we accomplished something. Some things were out of our grasp, but for the most part, it was just that enjoyable journey going through.
Oh, I forgot. Let's start with introductions. Yes. My name is Maya. I'm Maya. I was the game master and the narrator and, you know, created this story along with the players here. And then I will go with who I see in like a Z zigzag direction. So Meg.
Hi, I'm Meg. I played Kath. Yeah, that's kind of the introduction. I played Kath.
You could say her archetype you chose or something. I don't know.
Oh yeah, her archetype was the investigator. I kind of started her off as, you know, like an armchair sort of detective type investigator, doing her own things behind the scenes rather than the traditional sort of like police work investigator type.
Gotcha. It was like more like private investigation.
Yeah, like she's doing it from her own stuff, but she has no formal training type thing, you know, like an internet sleuth.
Okay. Arcturus.
Oh, hi, I'm Arcturus. I played Ryan Brewer. His archetype was the runaway kid. Kind of leaned more into the running away aspect of it.
Went hard on the run part.
Definitely went through a few different archetypes when character building before settling on the runaway kid concept, because definitely wanted a character who would see just like landmarks at the end of the world. So it was, yeah, I loved how it turned out at the end, though. If I could talk, what it finally settled on. So,
same. And Serge.
I'm Serge. I played Luke, Red State Gay, outcast archetype. So it's a different take about an outcast. Yeah, that's basically it. It's in a sense, it's not a typical outsized, like edge of society, but more like I was the center of society and then just the sadkas just think it's not for him for many reasons, obviously. So that's basically Luke.
Yeah, Okay, so that now that we did it kind of backwards, but Arcturus, you're talking about the overall season. What do you think about your character and his arc and how it finished, how it started versus how it finished?
Definitely a roller coaster for me, because like just for Ryan's character alone, he started very much isolated. His family was in Neurocasters. He joined the party, had that kind of pseudo family as they went across California, and then when we hit the end, he kind of just lost that pseudo family, was alone for a bit, and then we hit the epilogue where he returned home, and it was just the emotions with that was just like I kind of got caught up with that.
It was great. I was happy to make everyone cry. I mean, that's my ultimate goal. But what about everybody else regarding their character, where they started, where it ended? What do you
say? I can have a go.
Yeah.
I think for Luke, it's more or less, he did accomplish the goal, in a sense, standing up to his father. The difference is that kind of got translated in the ideas that I couldn't help my mother, because like he couldn't help his mother, so he has to help a mother. Failed ultimately, but you know, he already made his peace with the whole idea. And plus, there was this lingering disappointment at the mid part of the story where I had to blame Kat. And it seems like, you know, it's a very natural reaction for Luke. And then noticing that he couldn't actually stand up against the oil rats. And it just made him realize, like, that gotta change. Especially with the anime beach scene. It's like, things need to change. I need to help this said person.
Yeah. I like how we're officially calling it the anime beach episode.
Well, that was the title of the episode.
Yeah, that's so true. Okay, what about you, Meg? What do you think?
I mean, I kind of love that, like, from the very first episode, literally everybody was kind of, it was kind of like this unspoken thing of, like, Kath knew she wasn't coming back, and everybody would kind of say it around her, sort of thing, but nobody would kind of say it to her, so it was kind of this kind of thing where everybody knew she wasn't coming back, but we didn't know why she wasn't coming back, whether it was because she was successful or because she wasn't, and I love that ultimately, like, she wasn't successful in killing the Radiant Shepherd, but I do think that her having the conversation with him and getting to confront him at least was cathartic in its own sense for her. I do think she got some form of closure. I don't think, like, that vengeance of, like, wanting him dead is gone, but I do think there was some form of, like, catharsis in being able to confront him. So I loved that, like, even if she didn't manage to, like, even if she wasn't the one to do it, like, yeah, you know, like the like, yeah, I found that, and yeah, and even with the, like, sort of how Ryan's story ended, like when we had that epilogue, like me and Serge were both like, it wasn't all for nothing. Like,
yeah, 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 it wasn't all for nothing.
There was still, like, that kind of joy in, like, seeing that they're like, not that it was, I still don't, even if that hadn't happened for Ryan, it wouldn't have all been for nothing, because obviously I think a thing with the electric state is that it's about the journey.
Oh yeah, 100%.
But yeah, no, I do think it was like Arcturus said, it was very bittersweet.
Bittersweet's a good word. That's a very good word to describe it for a couple characters. I a little peek behind the curtain in terms of me, I prep every session and get it ready. Of course, it's a lot of it is to play to find out. So I didn't plan for you to, like, I didn't make plot beats and, like, okay, and this is where she kills the Radiant Shepherd because this is her goal and she wants to tap. It's kind of like, hey, I'm gonna present the opportunity, and then it's up to you and the dice. And the dice said, not today.
They usually do.
Yeah. We gotta pray for Meg, because the dice gods, she did something to offend them, because they don't like her. But yeah, so a little peek behind the curtain, that epilogue scene was not planned by me. That was, it came into my head, like right at the end. And I was so like, crazy. We gotta do that. And then I didn't even know why I wanted to do it. And then after that, I was like, I'm so glad I did, because it's like at least one person got something. And it was really nice. It was very sweet to be like, okay, at least like, dang, did someone come out? You know? And I thought about that. And I thought it was really nice that at least someone got, you know, some form of a happy ending.
He went on that journey to like find a family. He found a family. He lost the family. He found the family again. Like it was just such a like perfect circle. Like as well, like, and it, like everything just sort of like clicked. Like, so the fact that you came up with that just sort of like off the dome at the end of the session, that's insane.
And what's crazier is I didn't even know why I wanted to do it. I was like, you know what? Hey, I have like, it came into my mind, and it's not something I thought about for the entire session. I was like, okay, I'm gonna wait to the end and then like surprise him. Like, it literally came like 15 minutes before we ended. And I was like, or I think it happened like when like the old man went to come. Also, the old man coming was also not planned, but the old man coming to sit with you, I was thinking, like, as I was talking, my mind just goes while I'm talking at the same time. And then I was thinking that, oh, I should do like another scene with him at the end. And that's when it came. It came in like the last 15 minutes.
Crazy.
It was great.
It was such
great.
A good surprise. But I did have this feeling of dread because I was like, oh no, am I going to see something horrifying as I open this door? So it was like both like, it was very a very nice surprise. I was like, oh.
Yeah.
Because he had left them in Neurocasters and oh.
It's kind of like the end of Get Out. Spoilers. Haven't seen it. When his friend Rod pulls up in the police car, and you just see the red lights, and you think, oh my god, he's going to jail, because it's like a police car, it's a black man over a white woman's dead body, like, oh, he's getting shot and killed, and you see this, he's been through this whole thing throughout the whole movie, and you're like, come on, he can't catch a break, and then it's his friend, and then you take this like this sigh of relief, and it's like, it's nice, like you want something nice to happen for the person who's just been through so much. And so yeah. I think that's why it's so nice that you have that ending scene. It would have been cruel. It probably would have been more realistic if they were actually just kind of super emaciated and you saw that they were finally gone. That's probably the realistic thing that should have happened. Yeah, I didn't want it to be that dark though. But anyway. But yeah, so We got some questions from people who listened in. One question is, in your podcast, there was certainly tension between some of the PCs, but you didn't really get into the tension hope mechanic. Any reason why you decided to edit that out? So on my end, I'll answer, and then you guys could be like, I think this is why. But I didn't edit it out because it's true. We didn't really get into that tension, the tension mechanic. And like hope is attached to it. Like if you relieve tension with another player, it restores a point of hope. I think on my end, it just probably wasn't at the forefront of my mind. If I don't plan it in my notes, it's probably not going to pop up. And I guess on your guys' end, nobody really brought it up either.
For my character anyway, I know a lot of the sources of tensions kind of shifted. So I was like with the relationships, because I know. At the beginning for Ryan, it was like, oh, there was going to be this awkward tension between him and Kath over James. But for the most of the narration, like when they talk about James, it's almost like this like hopeful reminiscing a bit. And I was like, I don't see that as a means of tension between the two of them. So maybe if I had retooled it, I could have brought that up more. But I know that was for me anyway. And I think my other source of tension was Imani. And that was more of just Ryan needling her a bit.
I think as well, I think the anime beach episode where we would have resolved tension, I think my hope was full. So I just didn't need the tension mechanic at the time either. So I was just kind of like, I'm chill, you know? Like, I think if I'd been pretty lacking in hope, I probably would have been like, yo, can I get my hope back, please? Sort of thing.
How would the very next episode during
And then I the desperately needed it. And then I desperately needed it, yeah. I know. But at the time, I'm pretty sure I was pretty stocked up with hope. at the time, I was doing okay. I was like, yeah, I don't really need it. I think I'm okay.
Oh, I'm good.
Yeah, I'm fine.
1 hour later.
Literally. The car's on fire. We're all screaming.
But yeah, I think like future seasons or, you know, whatever we do next could come into play more. It might just be a thing where, like, you know, whoever created the game, I don't know, it might just be a thing that just doesn't come up naturally enough. Or it's like an out of sight, out of mind type mechanic, I think. Like, if it's not written down, I won't be like, hey, okay, look, sounds like you guys are relieving tension so you can restore hope. Like, I really need to have that written down. Or it's just like, there's other more important, like, cool stuff to pay attention to.
Yeah.
Honestly, in my opinion, this whole game, it kind of blurred the line between game and theatrics or theater in general. Because we definitely amped the level of, like, this is a drama, we need to have some drama. Mm-hmm. Well, not as if we force it, but we, because, like, everybody kind of agreed in the background that it's more about presentation of characters rather than the mechanics of the game. So, yes. in my opinion, since we didn't really need to reduce tension, it's like at that point, it's DM Fiat and deciding that if an interaction will give us hope or not. At least that was my assumption, because we're so focused on the character and the character interaction that the mechanics kind of played as more of a supporting role rather than the main function of the game.
Yes, and I think I talked about that during the session zero and then made it clear that I do want them to come in where they need to be, but not, it won't be the focus. And I think that's part of my thoughts. Any type of like future season ideas, I do want to do more, have more mechanics in there. I want my idea is to have like tough characters. I want there to be more action, like fighting, guns, bombs, natural disasters. I just want more. I want more action. I don't want it to be like 007 or Mission Impossible, but I do want some more. Just to
okay, deal.
I want a different type of genre.
I'll play Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yes, exactly.
Ja, natürlich kann ich ja auch Deutsch, deswegen kann ich das machen.
Whoa! Anyway.
No, I just said, question. Because I can speak German, so.
I love that. Then you should. Can you be the typical, like, evil German?
Oh, natürlich schaffe ich das. Locker.
Next question. Anything that you do differently for a second season? Is there, like, if for your character that you played, let's say you're going to play your character again, is there anything that you would do differently with your character?
That's a hard question. I definitely...
Less pushing, you addict? Okay. Arcturus is a push addict, you guys.
More pushing. More hope lost. Definitely, like, maybe more interactions with the Neurocaster.
Okay.
Just to build up that tension. Because the thing is, like, I would have said, oh, maybe a photo of the group at the start. But I was like, I love how that played out towards the end when he, like, looks through his photos. It's all these landscapes. And he has no photos of the group. And I was like, that was not planned.
Man.
That was, and so, like, I loved that. So I would change that.
Like, him just realizing, like, I was so focused on my goal and my parents that I didn't even take the time to take a picture with the people I was traveling with. It was crazy. Oh, my gosh. Anybody else?
I think, personally, I would probably interact with Ryan more. The issue is that because I was only interacting with Ryan in the context of Cat. The best way to put it is that at the start, I'm really doubting. It's like, Cat, what are you doing this? You're going to end up dying after this. And I'm always suspicious of Ryan in the sense that it's affecting Cat to do crazy-ass shit. Yes. So I'll probably have interacted with Ryan more to understand the context of their relationship, because I only see it from the perspective of Cat grieving. Yeah, probably that one.
Okay, that makes sense.
I was just gonna say, like, it did work with the backstory, because I know, as we discussed, it was like Luke and Ryan very much only knew each other as acquaintances, and so there was that kind of barrier. Like, they had Kath as that connecting point between the two. So I did feel that was on point. But
I think, Kath, Okay, so first of all, something people should know about me is characters I create, they are all my babies. I love them all. Kath is probably my favorite character I've ever played.
Really?
Genuinely, yeah. I feel like I could have maybe pushed it like further with like James could have haunted the fuck out of that narrative, you know? like James could have haunted the fuck out of the narrative, and I could have pushed that a lot further, I think.
Okay.
So I think if I like yeah, she was a sad mom, but she like I don't feel like her grief was like palpable sometimes, and I really wanted it to feel like yeah, this is a woman who is like devastated, you know? And I wish I could have like pushed that more. So I think if I could go back and do it again, like as her, I want people to be devastated when like they hear her speak about him, you know? It was sad, sure, hearing her speak about him, but like I want people to have a pit in their stomach whenever they feel whenever they hear his name mentioned.
It's kind of I would say next time, like how actors do it is like they do research on the character that if like they're going to be a drug addict, like they go talk to people who've been like, or if someone's been like sexually assaulted, like they'll go talk to victims or something like that. You don't have to go talk to them if you don't know where to find them, but like there's like articles and stuff like that, or just watching videos on YouTube or
Craigslist.
Joel Miller is a good example from The Last of Us with his daughter, Sarah.
Like
the way that they wrote out his grief, like you could really really feel it on him, so it's kind of like that.
Example
of something to like get inspired by. It's too late now, but just for future reference, like researching and be like, okay, this is how they do it. Oh, I like that, and taking pieces. That's just my idea. You don't have to.
No.
Someone asked, what is a good house rule or official rule to ignore for longer games? Longer games. I think all the rules are good for longer games. I think for shorter games, the rule to ignore is planning so many stops and encounters and threats, because the game says to prepare all those. If I did all of that for every character and like prepared that, the game would have been a lot longer. And so at some point I had to like strip back the threats for everybody because I had planned this to be a shorter season, and we ended up being, I noticed this because Bakersfield took a long time, and I was like, oh no, I had 4 stops planned, and I was like, oh, there's no way, we're just gonna do 1 stop, like we have to keep going. So ignore that, I guess. Maybe focus, maybe the entire group has a threat that's following them instead of just each person, because but longer campaign, let everybody have a threat, and you have time to be like, this session's about your threat, this session is yours, and we have as much time as we need.
Because I'm gonna kick myself if this comes back to bite me, but I also think because it was shorter, because we all had you know, like the supplies we were allowed to have, like we had like the walkie-talkies, and we had gas, and we had all of that, we had all of that taken from us. That was really good, I thought.
That was great.
Like, because it was a shorter campaign, like it worked really well, because so many of our problems would have been solved if that hadn't happened to us. So many problems would have been solved if that just hadn't happened to us. So that was a really good decision, I think, as well. Just like taking that part of it away, you know, like the extra supplies you're allowed to have and that sort of thing. Like all our food was taken, like everything we had was gone. Like, so that was also like a really good like decision, I think, as well. Like, don't do that to me, like in other campaigns, but like for this specifically, this one time, it was really good.
Another thing that wasn't planned, it was just like how the dice rolled, and that's what ended up happening. But it worked with the story really well.
It did work.
It's gonna go in my notes is like, the more things people have, the more that they can rely on it. And I don't know if that makes for such an interesting story. So, make their car break down in a really creepy town. Okay.
Yeah. Personally, to answer the question, as a player, I think read the rules and throw it out in the window and let the DM decide if you're within the bounds of the rules.
yeah, definitely. It's kind of like know the rules so you can know how to break them, or that saying or something.
No, more know the rules so that you know, because you as a player know when you're overstepping and something is impossible.
Okay.
But do not be constricted by it. So basically just throw the rule book out because you already know the limitation. My point is that learn the limitations of the rule book and then let the DM, and then you just interact with the DM, because after all, this is a collaborative storytelling. You ask the DM what you want to do, and because the DM will tell you what you need to do, and then you just roll for it. And I think that's generally a good advice for players. You're not, because don't be too unbounded by the rule. That's it.
Yeah, 100%. I agree. And once you know the rules, it helps with role play too. So once you know the rules, you don't have to worry about that. All you have to do is be in your character and worry about how you want to role play them. You don't have to be like, oh, did I get that mechanic right? Or, oh, did I? It's okay. But if anything, the GM will be like, no, you can't do this, or yes, you can. Another question: which were the most intense moments in the story for the players?
I'm going first. Okay.
Oh, I got the most intense moment. I just edited last night.
Oh my god. Going on to that ship. Okay, right. No. Being in that robe, right? Oh my god, I can't even talk. Sitting next to Ryan and hearing the Radiant Shepherd being like, oh, we have new members. Let's welcome them onto the stage. I was like, no, not like this. This is not like, I had this whole thing in my head of how this was going to go down. I was picturing oh, we're going to seclude him in a room and it's going to go off like this. I did not expect it to be on a stage. I did not expect her to have to go up and shake his hand. That whole thing. I was honestly, my ear walked away from her computer for 3 seconds. And I was shouting to the other two, should I shoot him now? Should it be now? And I was trying to mess it. I was so stressed out because I just did not know when. I have never been that stressed out in a game before in my life. I was eating Sour Patch Kids at 3 a.m. because I just
back
did
after,
not.
After dealing with my dog Echo, because she was barking. And I was like, I'll be right back. Take a second to breathe. And then I come back and I hear you guys shouting for plans, and I had to stop you guys. I was like, no. No making plans. Wait, she has to decide in the moment. We can't.
And it was so stressful as well, because I'm as a player, I'm usually someone who I don't tend to take the lead on plans. I'm not the one that excuse the pun, I'm not the one that fires the trigger. I wait for somebody to say go, and I'm like, right, I'll be right there to support you. I like to support the party, right? I am not the one that says go. And everyone was waiting for me to be the one to do it.
Yes.
And that, in and of itself, I was like, I have lives in my hands right now. And that was so stressful to me. And I just, that and the car chase, but shaking the Radiant Shepherd's hand, knowing, and it was just all these people, the queue dwindling down, and the narration of the queue dwindling down. Oh, I genuinely thought I was gonna vomit. I'm not even lying. I thought I was gonna throw up.
There was at one point, Surge was like, I just like to interject. I'm waiting for Kat and what she's doing. Everybody's waiting on you and looking to you.
Oh, God.
He's as soon as she shoots, I'm going to stab my dad. the domino started with Kat. So it was crazy.
But those lines, I still think back to. It's like, would you want to be a martyr? stuff like that. Or how do you choose? The coldest lines from Kat. I was like, oh my gosh. Is this the moment? And I felt my heart just do.
I just finished editing episode 9 yesterday. At the end, we ended off with you asking, how do you choose who dies? And then I ended. And it was crazy. With the music in the background, it's coming out on Thursday. Oh. It's intense. Okay, so anybody else, what was your most intense moment?
Oh god, I don't like to go into a full diatribe, but I can put it in ranking. So number one, definitely climax, 100% tense, everything is watching, everything is hanging, it's everybody is at bated breath kind of situation, and it was tense, and it was I have a lot of commentary about the metaphors, etc., intentionally or not intentionally. That's number one. Number two is definitely Bakersfield when I confronted Kat. It's like, what are you doing? You're drugging everybody else down here. So that goes to number two. Yeah, it's like blaming her and everything. And then, of course, you have that scene about the flashback with my father's number three. And yeah. Though it's not Ooh. Dense, but yeah. Though it's not dense, my number four was definitely the like when Kat and I, because we're on the beach before when Ryan is walking away and said like, look, let's bygones be bygones.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was my number four.
Okay.
Definitely the climax, like everybody said. If I had to choose a second one, the Dust Bowl diner with the two automatons. That whole situation is a bad time.
The hog.
It's hard to choose. Yes.
The hog.
Just because the build up, because I didn't know what was going on. I was like, the rats? Like, what are they doing in the kitchen?
What do you mean, the rats?
Oh my gosh.
But I think in the moment, it was very horrifying. Like, finding out the truth, like, made it less so. It's like, oh, they were just trying to be kind and comforting. And then telling us about the oil rats. I was like, oh, okay. But in that moment, I was like, what are they going to do? These two very, very strange robots.
That's a big, actually, for me as a GM, I think... Because I'm viewing it as, like, I'm on the outside, so I don't feel it like you guys do. But I would say that is, like, my top two. It's, like, the climax at the end. The end of episode 9. Or that one when they're hugging you and they're squeezing you too tight. Oh, that was crazy. Just to listen back to it, I'm like, oh.
I also want to give an honorable mention to Kath making the deal with the oil rats. Purely because it was so close because obviously like sexual assault is usually one of those it's a line and veil, right?
Mm-hmm.
And obviously it was things we discussed, we were fine with it as like players and as a party sort of thing, but it's one of those things that like you just don't see in TTRPGs, right? And it was just like this dance across the line for it was excruciating. Oh. And it like not oh it was fun to do, but like it was just so like oh had, like it was just like pushing each other like yes, are you gonna was. Do it are you it gonna do like, it
gonna
are you gonna
it?
Do
who's
it
gonna say it
yeah it was so it was just like and it, that was really fun to have that back and forth of like the, just like this dance of like which one of us is gonna like do it first like break first.
I did have like, to that stop. Was I took a I stopped real quick I cut it out but I was like. I feel disgusting.
Yeah, I felt slimy afterwards. Like I was like, oh,
yes. Oh my
yeah.
God. I do
think like that is partly because of like the lines and veils and stuff too. But I do think it's also like a testament to like the comfort that you have with the people that you're playing with too. Because like that's not the sort of thing you can just do with like any random group, you know?
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, 100%.
Like that is not something you can just do with like any random group. A strong
I think this kind
mention.
Of game is great for people who have been playing together for a while or you have someone who's like mature like because Serge this is my first game with him but I know that he's a GM himself and that he can handle these things and so it worked out well but yeah definitely talk about that
I mean to be fair a certain situation recorded like oh let's do a side panel here just to make sure everything is okay. It's like because I would like to tackle this team. It's like that was very important as well.
Yeah, that's why I stopped it. Like in the middle, I was like, I feel gross. Okay, let's get back.
It was like, I feel gross. Are you sure you want to do this? And we were like, yeah, let's do it. Like, go for it.
And then someone said, how did the rules work out? What do you guys think of the rules for the mechanic? I mean, I like them. I think they get out of the way. They can get out of the way very easily. And very easy. You just, mechanically, very simple, in my opinion.
Okay. Go ahead, Meg.
Sorry. I think the way we played as well, because we were so character focused, I felt like because of the way we played, one, I could super focus on being in character, but two, when we did roll, they felt so important. Like it wasn't just like oh I'm rolling just to roll you know like every single roll I was like oh my fucking god like I was like literally shaking like whilst clicking like you know like every roll felt like it mattered and I don't feel like I have that a lot in like other systems And like, I feel like with Electric State generally, like the stakes feel high as it is. And it's nice to have the roles and the mechanics match that sort of tension anyway. So it all just really lends itself. Like it all just feels really like sort of seamless, and it all just like they all just like play together really, really well.
Okay, so I'm gonna answer this both as a player and as a DM. As a player, I love that it's like you make your character sheet, and the only time you really open it is if the DM wants you to roll something. And the most curious thing, there were some sessions that, oh, I forgot to open my character sheet. Yeah. It's like, just notice the it's a type of game, so it doesn't feel like you're constrained by the rules naturally, you know. As a GM, I really love the simplicity of it. Considering it's a relatively new, like year zero in general is rules light and definitely focus on the narrative. So it really complements your style really well, Maia. So I said, it's just like, there, I have nothing to say besides if you're the type of DM who likes good narrative, easy role, easy mechanics, it's the rules for you.
Yes. What do you think, Arcturus?
Last thing. We'll rarely stop to say, the mechanic says this, can I do this? We rarely did that.
That was nice. Yeah, I do love the system. You do like role play a lot more with the year zero engine, I've noticed. Like it's just like, I want to do this thing, here's this base stat, we'll roll, see how it goes. And then my favorite thing, pushing the roll. So even if you fail the first time, it's like, hey, maybe if I put more forward, I can succeed this next time. And so that makes for cool roleplay moments where it's like, yeah, you hit that first obstacle, you're not able to jump over it, but maybe you can go around it. And I've always enjoyed that.
They said, was it hard to find the right mood? The mix of 90s, high-tech, and apocalypse. They said it didn't sound like it was hard, but it would be nice to hear you talk about it. Find the right mood. I think a lot of it is up to the GM, like setting the scene and making sure that all those right pieces are in there. I don't think it was hard to find the right mood. I took a lot of inspiration from The Last of Us and just the Electric State in general, the picture, not the picture book, his art book is really great to get inspiration from as well. And then there's a lot of those like post-apocalyptic, pre-apocalyptic stories. What's a zombie one?
The Walking
Which
Dead.
Zombie one?
Or...
The Walking Dead. Sorry, I know there's something. The Walking Dead. So I would just take inspiration from that. And in the book, the campaign guide really shows you how to, like, it has tables and charts about setting the right mood for this setting. And so, like, it's the 90s, but it's not the 90s that you remember. So add in the 90s stuff, but then also add in this weird, like, weird couples at the diner. You know, something's just a little bit off. It's something that you know, but there's something off, and it's like Uncanny Valley. So try to stay in that Uncanny Valley-ness of it all, and that's what I try to do. Especially with the diner people. Does anybody have any regrets? Is another question.
Regrets?
Yeah.
Anything nah, man.
Didn't do? I didn't really have any regrets.
No, I think it was like, as a character, Luke dying, that was really good. And in essence, is that Luke joined this trip for Cat. And then, you know, he stood up. His arc was finished by the end. So by the point where live or die, that was the end of the line for his story. Like, I don't believe there's any chance for him if he did live any continuation. And I also like the idea is that the best tragic stories are the ones left. Like, a lot of questions still left unanswered. And with Luke, there's still a lot of questions left unanswered. So therefore, it's really good. That's why I have no regrets.
Okay, same. Everybody else the same? No regrets? Other than just, like, the character stuff we would do differently?
Yeah, no, I don't think... Yeah. I don't think... No, I don't... No. Apart from not fucking missing my shot. Beyond that, but... I like how it ended for Kath. So I'm not like no about it, you know?
The shot went off, we rolled, and there was no successes. What are you gonna do? What are you gonna do? Next question. Someone said, how do you go about the setting? Inspiration from the time and place from the real world or pop culture? Yeah, kind of answered that before with like The Last of Us and Walking Dead and all that good stuff. And then also, if you listen to Simon Stålenhag, if you listen to all of his albums that he creates, like to go along with this, that also inspires you too. And that music is kind of like played throughout while we're playing, and it's like a synth, sci-fi, something's like off-putting about it, kind of melancholic and dark. So listen to that while you're prepping and reading this art book. What rules would you put in the core Year Zero engine? I would just make it simple. I would just make everything like those four main stats. It's just so easy to just like create a character. And then just like, you got four agility and then you roll four dice. It's so simple and I love it so much. That's why me and Arcturus are playing Blade Runner. And Blade Runner could be that simple, you know? It could be. Yeah. Is there any mechanics that you guys really liked? And you're like, I wish this was in more stuff.
I did love how hope worked, because like I was thinking it was like Alien, where like once you lose hope, like you have this like panic, but like having hope lost and then your kind of character just runs out of steam really fit like the setting and tone of Electric State, where it's like people kind of just pushing through at the edge of the apocalypse, and then like something happens, they see enough, and then they finally run out of steam to the point where they just can't go on. And I did like that, and the fact that like other players could see that you're kind of incapacitated and then try to rally you. So I definitely like that mechanic.
I like when Kat's like, can I rally him while I'm driving like 70 miles an hour? And I was like, are you crazy?
Everybody was up there.
I had crazy questions from the players. The other one was Serge when he asked, he's like, can I make this roll and it not affect my hope? And I was like, what? No. I was
like, if you don't ask, you don't get. Okay.
No, I mean, I appreciate the ask. It's not gonna. Is the setting and location only decided by the campaign adventure narrative, or do you create your own? The book tells you that it's set in California, which is now called Pacifica. You can start there, but it also encourages you. You can step out, which I think I might do that and like drive, try to get to Nevada or something. You just keep going. Maybe somewhere.
Okay, for the humor of it. For the humor of it, I'm not American, so this place is as foreign. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not American, so this place is as foreign to me as any fantasy world. Okay.
Literally.
And I'm from California, so every place I was naming, I was like, I have driven here before. And I was like, this is.
I felt so bad. I couldn't appreciate it like you were appreciating it. I was like, that's so cool for you, my ear. Like, I love this for you.
Yeah. I was like, oh, that's where I grew up. It had the city name and all the cities like all around that I've been to, and I was like, oh, this is awesome. Okay, someone said, I'd like to know your favorite and least favorite things about the Free League system. Is there anything about the system that you like the most and like the least?
You're asking a DM here. I have a lot of comments there, but I'll keep it simple.
Yeah, keep it simple.
Yeah. I'll keep it simple. Pros, it's rules light. Cons, it's rules light.
Okay. Yeah, I could see why. Because there's some people who want the answers to certain questions to get very granular, and I get that.
Here's a slightly nuanced view. Like, sometimes as a player, you want to do something, but the rules in itself is very DM fiat. And
yeah.
It doesn't suit every player. So, as I said, if you're the type of player who just like, I want to be in a narrative, fuck the rules, it's the perfect rules for you. But if you, after all, it's still a game. So if you're looking for a game, it's kind of weak in the game aspect of it, but you know, that's it.
I like that the rules that are there very much support a narrative heavy, like role play character focused game that you want to play. And so, like, from the hope to the tension to, like, traumatic events that could happen, I like that the car chases and combat is relatively easy to understand. You get like two actions and you can have your reaction, and how it's in like zones for like the car chase, and so you don't have to think about like feet or anything like that, how many kilometers is something away. It's just like, just get this zone away, okay, and this or something like that. That's very kind of like theater of the mind way of like solving stuff. What do I like the least? I wish the rules for chases were a little bit simpler. I think that's where they get a little crunchy, and I was like, there's like a lot of rules, oddly, in that section in chasing the chases. But that's about it. Not the biggest dislike. I'll get it eventually. But what do you guys think?
Sanguis populi, the blood of the people, the dark protectors of the hidden city of Azeroth, deep within the illusory forest, familiar with death as they have eluded it, they are called upon for a desperate task: slaying a creature from the great beyond. Blythe.
This might not be easy, being surrounded by death. I don't understand how they can do it.
Elvira.
Someone must watch the bodies, and none do so as diligently.
Swan.
Into action so fast. I love when we get to go out.
It came from the sky. This great, pale monstrosity.
You just had to sate your hunger. You couldn't have saved it for the beasts.
I prefer the gratuity.
Vampirism is not immortality. It only prolongs the inevitable. Is this the end for Sanguis Populi? Blood in the snow. A tale yet told. Halloween 2025.
Sorceress! Lower the barrier for just a moment. Sanguis Populi departs.
Listen to Tales Yet Told wherever you get your podcasts.
I love that the Free League systems, it's always easy enough to pick up and just run with it. It's like, I have an idea for what the character should be, as well as like playing the game. Like, you don't have to be looking at the rules to make sure different checks. As far as what I don't like, that's hard because I really do like the Free League system.
Yeah.
So I would say definitely like for like archetypes, I wish there were more, so that you had like so much more to choose from. It's like, hey, like I have this character idea. Like, is there something close that matches up that I could modify? So I think just having more of a selection.
Yeah. Or just like a section where they're like, create your own archetype and here's how you do it. Mm. Or maybe, yeah. I don't know. I'm going to figure out how to try to homebrew something, because I do. Yeah, I agree with you there.
I really like that you're like encouraged to choose like your favorite song and like your hope and your like your dream and your flaw. That really helps you with your like decisions and what you do. I am someone who tends to get like very swept up in like what's going on in that like direct scene. But like having the dream and the flaw, I feel like I was very true to like her dream and flaw. Like, everything I did was like to get to the Radiant Shepherd, and the only time I deviated was like literally right at the last episode to go find Luke. And by then it was kind of like it made sense, because like she'd had this argument with him and then she'd made up, and it was kind of like, well, maybe the friend I have right now is more important than the revenge I'm seeking, you know? Narratively it kind of made sense. I don't know if it's like because it's kind of like weirdly complicated, or if I just, or if it is actually just a bit dodge, but in combat, the whole you lose your action if you try and dodge stuff, why? Like, why do I have to take the hit or lose my action? It feels really unfair. It feels so unfair.
Like, I think that was the point.
like, you know, like, and considering, like, you have, like, 3 HP, it's like, I either die or I lose my action. And then it just feels like you're kind of, like, you're setting yourself up for a cycle of just, like, constantly trying to dodge stuff and you never get to take your action, you know?
Yeah.
I don't like that. But,
well, yeah, the so, thing like, is, you get 2 actions. You can move and then you can act. So you move the ability. You lose the ability to act, if I'm correct. But you can still move.
Oh. But like, if you're being restrained or whatever, you can't move.
That's true.
So it's like, you got me there. You know what I mean? I don't know. I don't know if I love that part, but I feel like that can also be like kind of jigged about if you hate it that much as well.
Yeah, that's true.
It's not a massive thing because it doesn't come up loads. But yeah, that was one thing that I was kind of like, oh fuck, every time it came up, you know.
Yeah,
but it wasn't a massive
I will back thing. That thing because it created that whole situation is like, I need to take the shot. I need to take the shot because I need to do something else. So because it puts a question. So I said, I can't do anything. It's like, I need to save my actions, so I need to take the shot, you know? And there was this whole, like, back as, like, because, like, unless the DM will allow me to do something else, I will just stand here, take the shot, grab the gun, and then fire. And I survived that shit.
That's crazy.
I'll defend the system for that, because it creates this whole contrived question. A bit contrived question regarding what will you do, and it also promotes the ideas that every action requires more than one people to actually succeed in something, and kind of force that dynamic. So I kind of like it. That's my defense for it.
And I also like that most things that the game asks you for, like, there's a mechanical reason for it. So they ask for your flaw. Like, I play games where it's like, we just ask you these just for your own, like, roleplay reasons, and you're like, okay, cool. But, like, here, they ask you for a flaw, and at the end, when you're, like, leveling up your character, if you followed that flaw, then you roll dice, and then you get more points and stuff like that. So there's reasons for most things. I think favorite song is, like, the only one that doesn't really do anything.
It's fun, though, but we had, like, fun moments with it still. Like,
yeah.
It's still added to the game still. Like, yeah. I think it's.
If you want to be with my girlfriend, you need to get along with my friend.
It hurts me that you don't know these lyrics. Okay, now I had asked you guys to come prepared with your own questions for each other. Are you guys ready?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, we'll start with you, Meg. What questions you got, buddy?
Okay. So, I don't know, I feel like this is a really long question, but all of our characters are driven by familial, like, family relationships. Do you think that there's, like, a particular quality that Electric State has that, like, encourages, like, specifically family relationships and character backstories? So, like, obviously, like, it was Kath and her son, Luke and his dad, Ryan and his parents. And I feel like, I feel like in Electric State, more than the other games that I've played, family crops up a lot more than it does in other TTRPGs.
I don't think that is inherently native to the system itself. It's just that we came in with the expectation that there is narrative, and one of the those like gut-wrenching kind of narratives, personally for me, is family-related. And I really went by ear. The only thing because when we started Session Zero in my mind was that I want to play a red state kid, son of a politician, and gay. That's literally the 3 things I wrote down that I want to play. And then when I hear the narrative and I then start hearing everybody else, it's like my DM mind kicked in. It's like, for this story to have a very nice conclusion, it needs to tie in with the family aspect of it. So I hammered that in. I don't think it's inherent. That's my answer.
Yeah,
that's... Yeah, there was definitely a lot of relationship dynamics between the group itself. But yeah, I don't think the system pushes for it, but I did appreciate like those stories and how like it kind of deepened our character's backstory by having that kind of history. Because I know for Ryan's, a lot of his was kind of his motivating factor was his family at home. So like, even if he made it to the end of the journey, he still had to come back
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. It's like interesting because like I was sort of thinking about it and stuff as well. And it's just like in electric state, like the point is that you're going somewhere. And the point, not the point, but like usually it's for someone or something. And like you have to have a strong tie to them. So like family's usually the point of it. And then obviously like the game's usually about like the journey rather than like actually sort of getting there. And then you have that found family trope as well. So I feel like because the game sort of encourages that sort of like the journey aspect, I feel like it kind of lends itself to the like the found family trope thing. And then I think it was kind of maybe like a happy coincidence that we all sort of came up with like family like orientation backgrounds and stuff. But I was wondering like for my ear, did that crop up for you? Like the fact that excuse me, Serge. Like, did it crop up for you? Like, did the fact that we all had
the sound of the motorcycle was from me?
Oh, I'm so sorry.
So hard. Just like side eyeing the road.
I just saw him outside and was like, motorbike, obviously, Serge. I'm so sorry.
I should have let him keep it. No,
you should have. But because we all had like family relationships and stuff. But like, did you like as a GM? Did you like see those like threads and were like, ooh, I can pick and play at those at all? Or was it just sort of like,
I think it was like you said, I think it was a happy coincidence. I think that like familial relationships and stuff like that is they're always powerful. And you guys just kind of like, you know, lean towards it, because I think inherently people know that, like, it's in media a lot, like that how found family or your blood family, like how it's important and strong and has a lot of tension attached to it, whether that's good or bad. So I think, and we know we're all exposed to media and stuff like that, so maybe you kind of everybody just kind of like floated towards it subconsciously.
I think that you need to give yourself more credit, Maya. Here you definitely plant the idea of found family, because you keep saying think The Last of Us, think The Last of Us.
You're right.
Subconscious planting there, come on.
Okay, is that your only question, Meg?
No. And then this one's like mainly for players. Sorry, but when you were like in session zero and stuff, when you sort of like planned out how your character or what you were gonna play, was there a point like in the first few sessions or even like later on where you were kind of like, oh, actually, I think this character is gonna turn out a different way to what I'd originally envisioned? Was there ever any a point where you were like, oh, actually?
Because at one point, generally speaking, as I said, son of a politician running away from the father, I didn't really have any more coherent about it. The OCD, I planted it in. Because diabetic is just a tie-in, because Amani's story into it, to be honest. But it did eventually played out.
Yeah.
Because for when I lost hope and everything, so that was fun. Generally speaking, what surprised me, there's two aspects. First off, I didn't really have a very fleshed out backstory, so Maya hit me with that one. It's like, yeah, let's roll with that. So it was like, oh, interesting, I learned something new about my character. Additionally, learning that Luke stress cleans, and because stress cleans and definitely not confrontational, doesn't act out towards like domestic violence, that surprised me. And then it just keeps informing me regarding his behavior. He's that he's just that weak guy who thinks he has a good opinion about things, but it's not really the case. And more like the issue of morals, and plus, you know, the whole idea of his father. Because as I said, Maya just carried with the fathers. Like, I didn't know how my relationship with my father. Mm. I just know he disowned me to a certain extent. But that kind of changed later on, where I just ran away and he just didn't bother to look for me. And I took that as a sign that I was really good, but, you know, false sense of confidence kind of situation. So it did help that Maya introduced elements that I could work with and situations that crop up in the campaign that I can work with, and that just informed me about who Luke really was. As I said, I have a very light paper, like not even half a page of the concept I had for the character.
He definitely didn't know his dad was going to be a psychopath. I said, thank you. I'm going to run with this.
Yeah. Yeah, but what type of psycho? I don't know. You know, there's so many types of psycho.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But okay. Question back to you, Kat. You post this question, you need to answer it, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think, because obviously we hadn't discussed that Kath and Luke were close. That was just something we kind of like
play off.
Yeah, we just sort of like went off, like as we sort of went along. And I think, kind of like the more we went in, I kind of had Kath as more kind of sympathetic, sort of at the start. Like she was kind of passive, and then that body in the road, in the first episode or first session, sorry. And when she sort of like pulled Imani into the car, and she was kind of like a shot caller in that situation. I was like, oh no, actually, I think Kath is someone who knows what her shit's about. You know, she's actually somebody who is she knows what she's gonna do and what she wants. She's a lot more in the driver's seat than a lot of the characters I play, which is actually like I said, I like to be somebody who plays a more supportive sort of character as opposed to like someone who does a lot of the shot calling. So I was kind of like, oh shit, I actually, like, if I'm gonna do this, I'm actually gonna have to like do this, you know, sort of thing. So I was kind of like, oh okay, right, well, we're committing to it, we're committing to the bit. We're committing to being a shot caller. So I tried to do that from that moment where it was sort of like she's dragging people along and she's like getting the gun out and fucking shooting things and making deals with people and stuff like that. Like I sort of I was sort of deals. Like, yeah. Sexy coerced deals.
Whoa.
Because I'm always like, oh, I don't want to step on toes, but Kath is absolutely like, when you're like hell-bent on revenge, like you're gonna fucking step on toes. So yeah, I sort of tried to lean into that more, but originally she was gonna be like sweet sort of housewife, like sweet as pie, and then like bam, she has a gun, you know. I was like, no, I don't think that's who she is.
I don't think so.
What about you, Arturis?
I would say definitely for Ryan, I always planned for him to be that scaredy cat, always running away. I didn't ever really plan for him to be as gullible as he kind of was, like having this kind of idealistic look on everything, which was so fun because like, as I said during one session, like the player in me, I was like, this feels like a trap. But let's see where this goes. Like, and to have that like positive outlook on like certain situations, like when he's talking to the people at the Dust Bowl diner in the inn, and then even that robot who's just waving with that big arm, they're like, everybody's kind of apprehensive, and I was just like, well, Ryan's obviously curious, he'll go check that out. That resulted in a really fun scene. It was little bit tense, but still it did open up more opportunities and stuff. And that, it was so funny after the sessions being like, maybe your flaw should change from scared to gullible.
And
I was like, yeah.
Yeah, and no, then I was legit gonna change his flaw, like mechanically, like it should be gullible at this point.
And then my last question is for you, my year. Having like run this for 10 episodes or 5 sessions, is that the sort of like model you would run with for future sessions, or like for future seasons, or is there any other sort of like format you'd like to run with or test out, or is it like you're kind of like, yeah, this is the sweet spot?
The positive is that we had a very specific set of sessions, and I mentioned this before, in episodes planned. It felt more intentional. So we were like, we have our beats that we need to hit, and everybody was like, okay, we understand. It was less relaxed, but not in a bad way. It was kind of, we're all just kind of like keyed up, like we know what, we had goals and we know we have to do stuff.
It was really helpful having, like knowing what beats we needed to hit.
Yeah, I would say
that was so helpful.
Before each session, I would send like, okay, here's the session overview. This here's the beats we're going to hit. But I wasn't like, it wasn't like a linear type thing. It was just like subconsciously just remember that we need to get out of Bakersfield today.
Like, yeah. It wasn't like in Bakersfield. It wasn't like you need to find a way to do this and this and this. It was literally just like get out of Bakersfield. Fill up the car, car, that sort of thing.
So it was just like little bullet points I would send the players, and I found that it actually makes it even more collaborative because it's like, not that we're all GMing, but it's like we're all now consciously working together to move along the story. And I'm not telling you how to do it, but I'm just telling you, let's get here by the end of the session or something like that. So I like that. I don't know if this is very specific, the type of the amount that we did. I was thinking that there's a lot of like editing you saw. You got a sneak peek. There's a lot of post-production. And it's not, I don't hate it, but it's not the fun part.
No.
But it's pretty interesting because I can add in cool sounds and stuff. But I think next time I want to do something a little bit longer. Let something breathe a little bit longer. Less post-production. Do a lot more stuff like while we're recording and not do it after. And so it's already done. I'm thinking if I want to do it again, I want to do something a little bit longer and more relaxed. You know, have a couple more stops. But this is perfect because it felt like it felt more intentional. By the time it was like the last session, I was like, you guys, this is the last session. Are you guys ready?
I also think it's like really important to remember this was like your first time running Electric State as well.
yes.
Like that's something like I feel like is very hard to that is very easy to forget, like if it's not constantly mentioned that like this is also your first time running it. Like, because that's true. That's crazy.
not my first time running systems ever, so I wasn't inexperienced.
No, not systems ever.
But my first time running in Electric State, and I really, really love it. So that's why I want to do it again. But I want to do something longer for sure. Thanks for asking that question. Arcturus, do you have any questions for us?
I do. I apologize for the format in advance, but I'm going to just skip three questions.
Let's hear it.
Okay, so this is for everybody.
Quickly, let's answer them as we're coming near to an end. So we'll answer them. We'll answer them quickly.
Oh, gotcha. Then I will just do one. Okay. Just because of how these are written. The finale of the series was a bittersweet end to a roller coaster of a journey. How do you think the ending would have differed if Kath had succeeded in killing the Radiant Shepherd? Would it have impacted the emotions felt in the concluding scenes? Yeah.
I think so. Let's say the shot went off, you had the gun right under his chin, and the bullet goes through his head. Then what? You're still going to jail, but you know that you got what you wanted at the end.
I still don't think she would have been satisfied. Like, I think even if she'd killed him, I still don't think it would have been... Because it's what everyone had been telling her, you know? Like, it wouldn't have brought James back. And she knew that the whole time, but, like, it was, like, her last kind of, like... sort of hope that like maybe she could finally move on if this guy was dead, but I still don't think it would have brought that relief that she thought it would.
So true. Okay,
so I think either which way it would have gone, I think she still would have been, you know, but at least she would have, I still don't think she would have been able to grieve properly.
Oh, definitely not. Yeah, so it was
she's still too angry about it all.
I don't think it would have changed that much. I think you would have.
No, I don't think.
You would have
went
to jail longer. You would have went to jail for murder instead of just attempted murder.
Yeah, I don't think much would have changed. I think she'd still be angry. I think at least now the fact that she was unsuccessful, I think there's still a chance that Harold might speak to her still. But I think if she'd been successful, Harold would be like, "That's it. Like you've done this. Like you crossed the line." Type thing. Like at least there's still a somewhat chance, you know.
Do you guys want to know what the judge said at Catherine's hearing?
Yes.
Guilty as fuck.
Obviously. Girl, they're like, this is happening quickly. Your trial was the process. You were charged with attempted murder, as well as possibly terrorism. That was put in there as well. You're arrested immediately. Given the high profile nature of the case involving the cult leader, your trial was fast tracked. Mysteriously, who made that happen? Oh, who knows? The prosecution pushes for a severe sentence. Okay, and your defense was weak, considering the powerful forces behind luminaries.
Can I tell you what I think? Oh.
She was sentenced to 15 to 20 years in prison for attempted murder, with little chance for parole due to the involvement of the influence of the Luminaries and their allies. And you were sent to San Quentin State Prison, located just north of SF, San Francisco.
But I think because she wasn't successful, I think obviously high profile and that sort of thing, I think she would have built up, not a fan club, but other grieving people who've lost people to this cult. I think they would look to her in the same way they look to the Radiant Shepherd, and she'd build her own kind of, like...
She's got a little gang in the prison.
No. Yeah. Outside the prison, like, people write to her and stuff, and they're like, you're an inspiration. They're like, you're an inspiration, like, you're doing this. And I feel like, because she said to him, like, I won't be the last one to try this, you know? And she, like, starts this kind of, like, move from inside the prison. That's what I think.
She did say that. She did say that.
Sorry, I sort of took over there. Sorry.
No, it's fine.
What if Serge? What if your character Luke got the shot off on his dad?
On Kat? On my dad. At that point, I was thinking, like, the difficulty is just standing up to my dad, and I've been, because I already, that was two sessions, and at that point, that is resolved. I already can admit, because Luke can already admit to himself that he can stand up to his father. When I do get the shot towards the Raging Shepherd, though, it just feels like a redemption, because like a redemption through proxy, in the sense that I couldn't help my mother, but I can help Kat, kind of situation. Yeah.
It's really sweet.
Yeah.
Serge, do you have a question for us?
I'll just keep it brief, even though I want to deep dive this as like as players. So this is a question towards the players. Were there any situations, or have you been, because in during the campaign, where you just think this needs to be more tension, let's spice it up?
Ooh. Ooh.
Do you have an example while they're thinking?
Okay, for example, the car scene where we're riding and we're trying to know the character, because this is very first session and I don't know Imani, so I think this moment is literally just a car ride. Might as well throw in some suspicion, some let's not do this reluctancy kind of situation to add more tension to regarding the car ride, because else it will be just lingering. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I like that. He's thinking about how we can spice up the story.
I think I definitely could have played the Ryan reminding Kath of James more. Like, there could have been a lot more tension there if I'd pushed that more. But I kind of feel like it just made her sad, rather than like that he wasn't him. She knew rather than delude herself, you know. So it didn't feel like quite as right. But I feel like I definitely could have in those first few at least. Sort of like put more tension there and really forcing that James is the sort of like replacement. Ryan is the replacement for James.
How about you, Ryan? Arcturus?
it's a hard question because there were so many, like, I do get that, like, starting you off when you're meeting characters, kind of is establishing that relationship dynamic, sometimes causing tension or issues, and then like you can work to resolve them or they get worse. You kind of digress. I'm not sure, because that thing with Ryan reminding Ryan kind of similarly if I could talk today, I apologize.
It'd be
Ryan
like
reminding Kath of James. I could have leaned more into that, but again, it was that thing where it's like every time they talked about it, it was just like this sad reminiscing, and so there wasn't a lot of energy to it, to that scene.
It's just...
you ended up in this like sad spiral.
Sadness spiral.
I have one more question, but towards the DM. DM, considering you have planned this to be for 5 sessions, have you ever considered that, because having a set goal presented early on without the details, for example, if you presented this game with a goal to reach San Francisco for whatever reason, would that have been easier for you to construct a narrative, or were you more eager to play with what the players come up?
I'm trying to understand the question. So you're saying, was it easier to construct the narrative because I knew they were going to San Francisco?
No, if you presented this campaign with already a set location and goal kind of situation, would have it been easier for you? Or were you more eager to play with what the players come up with?
Oh, yeah, I'm always eager to see what the players come up with. I could have definitely came and be like, okay, we're heading to SF and you guys just fit your character to go with that. But I like Session Zero to collaborate. And I think that first option of like seeing what you guys all come up with. And then I'm like, hey, how about we get to San Francisco? That kind of all makes sense. And then everybody kind of all agrees. So I like the collaboration part more. And all of us deciding where we end up. It's not going to ruin the story for me, so. Because the story's not about context, like where we're ending up, it's about like what happens in between point A and point B.
Yeah.
Okay. Final question, and it's DM specific. Production wise, would have been easier if you used all the tools that you have used eventually for a new campaign from the very start, or would you still go it by ear as presented here?
By ear? What do you mean?
For example, you started introducing this is goals for the session. Would you have presented that way earlier, and would you start a new campaign with those expectations already set? Like with the tools?
Yes. Yeah. I think I'm going to start doing when it's like this, when the production is a little bit higher and it's a little bit more serious and everybody's on board for everything. Yeah, it's a lot easier. I would have done that from the beginning because it does help move the story along. Like, because I didn't know we were going to be in Bakersfield for that long. I think that's when I started giving like the pre-session overviews because I was like, we need to get out of Bakersfield.
We got to get out of here.
Yeah, so those type of notes before a session were really great. But on your guys' end, I don't feel like I was giving away like spoilers or anything, right? Or like telling you what to do. I think it was just like, keep this in mind.
It's so helpful. Okay. Like, genuinely. Because it felt like we weren't like wasting time, like running around after things that like weren't important. You know? I feel like if you hadn't given us the get out of Bakersfield thing, we would have spent probably like two more sessions trying to figure out what the fuck the rats thing meant. You know, it was just really helpful so that we weren't chasing like dead ends or like just getting lost in like the conversations between characters are really fun, but like it's not obviously like when you have things to be doing, it's not always like possible to spend like hours and hours having conversations.
Right. And sometimes like because this was supposed to be like entertaining, it was supposed to be like entertainment. This type of game and the way that everything's structured, how it's more intentional, slightly less relaxed. That's why it's like, hey, hit these beats because talking for an hour is boring. Like this is the stuff they cut out. And I was like getting inspiration, but from like Dimension 20 and like, okay, so what do they cut out? Oh, they cut out like the mechanics talk, like for the most part, because we don't really. That's not going to push the story forward. He's just asking which attribute do I roll? And you have to keep that stuff in. That's what I meant. Like if I'm going to do something longer, less production heavy, it's going to be a little bit closer to the Sunday game that I run for City of Mist, which is like keep a little bit of everything in. Still intense because it's Electric State, but yeah, it's just the editing takes a long time.
Yeah.
So
I have one more question, but this is worldwide. For the whole table.
For the whole world? Hey.
Yeah, for the whole world. Hello, viewers. No. How did the idea that this is going to be a narrative podcast affected your general presentation / playstyle?
Oh, that's a good question. Did it put any pressure on you?
Oh, you guys first. I'll answer it last.
You go.
Yeah, it's just definitely unfamiliar waters because I was like, this is the first time I've done a narrative podcast like this. And I was like, how do you embody a character? And so I always kind of took cues from other players and slowly was building my play style that way. So definitely the pressure was more just like being put into the unknown and kind of learning from there.
I bought this mic for this game. Thank you. That's one. But also, like, I knew my year was putting a lot of time into it, so I wanted to create a character that was, like, really personal to me. And, like, I lost one of my best friends to suicide, so I wanted a character that was, like, really, like, with that, like, I don't know, I wanted something that was, like, personal to me as well. So, like, Mayu was putting so much of herself into the game, I wanted to put, like, part of myself into the game to, like, sort of match the energy as well, you know? So I feel like there was kind of that, like, equal sort of, I don't know, there was that kind of, like, there was equal sort of, like, I feel like there was a lot of love poured into it, you know? From, like, both sides of it. So I feel like you have, like, both that sense. It was, like, you have, like, that emotional sort of energy, but then, like, the time and then, like, money on the stand and the mic and things like that too. But I didn't feel pressure. It wasn't like, oh, you have to be performing amazingly. But I think because you have that personal touch in it, you want to do justice to it as well, especially when it's something like you deeply care about. And especially when you know other people are putting like time and like passion into it too. Like you want to respect that as well. So yeah, like I was just really like, I want to put as much in as like what everyone else is putting in. And like, I want to match that energy.
Search.
On my end, Maya, don't forget to answer. You're included in this. on my end, oh yeah, I definitely like, because Maya and me had some back and forth regarding the audio setup. Like I already had that audio setup and everything, but because I had tried to improve it as much as possible. This is definitely
we got a lot
my
of talks,
first
time. Just like...
yeah. I did patch it up. Now my room kind of looks weird because I have weird places where I put like a blanket or something. I was like, okay. That's why I said, okay. Thank God I'm not in my room at this point. Plus it's crowded. Either way, that's beside the point. So there's this whole like the back end of things where I learned quite a few. Of course, I have the pressure because I want to give my ear the best audio that I could manage.
Yeah.
Wait, Karm's moving.
he's being conscious of audio even now.
yeah, because it made me more aware about the whole aspect of it. In terms of performance, I am not the type of person who likes being recorded, but thanks to Maya, it's like, you know what, it's actually not as bad as I thought it would be. Gave me definitely some confidence. There was definitely some level of anxiety when it was being recorded, but I was thinking, you know what, let's just release my inner extrovert, even though I'm a really strong introvert. And it worked out. So it made me realize, despite the pressure, I can like be in such a situation, and I tremendously enjoyed the experience.
I am really glad that you guys had fun. I know this type of game and style is not for everybody. It's definitely different from like, I have a Friday like D&D game, like totally opposite. Like we still stream it, but it's just like totally chill, you know, relaxing.
Yeah.
Totally different vibe, which is, it's different, not bad. But yeah, this type of like, what I'm looking for here is very specific. And so it could be like, for some people, it would be just be like, oh, that's too much pressure. I can't. I don't want to feel like I'm performing or anything like that. And did you guys feel like you're performing? I feel like for the most part, it was your genuine like reactions. And, but there was, I don't know. Was there anything that was performative other than just like, hey, I want to spice up the scene because I know that would be interesting. But, you know, which is fine too. And I appreciate it because as me trying to tell a good story, I appreciate the players like, oh, I think this would help the story, so I'm gonna say this.
I have a quick answer for that one. All the fucking dice rolls, you have seen the videos, Maya, those are not performative at all.
Oh, yeah.
That is genuine reaction. It's like, oh!
If anything proves that a lot of it wasn't performative, it's that the dice rolls really did decide a lot.
As I said, I already mentioned, as a player, I did try to see if the scene was a bit stale, so I tried to spice it up. But that's part of roleplay either way. Mm-hmm. It's like there's a situation that happened. How would my character react? Is the scene providing some opportunity for a character expression or for somebody else, or helping others to express their character? I think that's the only part of the performative I would like to put out. But then again, that's also my inner DM.
Trying
to get players engage, so the only, because like the number one thing most DM do to get their attention, throw tension into the bucket and watch them fight over it.
Yes, exactly.
I genuinely think I think it was so easy to get into character. Mm. Weirdly, I think of all the games I've played, this is the easiest it's been to get into character because of the atmosphere and because of, like, not so much how serious, but because of how seriously everyone was taking it. I don't think I had to think about what I was going to say or how I'd react to things. It just came, like, naturally, sort of thing. Like, I never kind of had to be like, what would they say to that? Like, I just knew. Sort of thing. So I never really sort of felt like I had to kind of be like, oh shit, what would, sort of thing. Which was really nice. And I think it's why, like, I kind of love Electric State so much as well. Like, it's just so easy to just, like, get into that headspace, I think, because it is so, like, dark. I don't know. Not like, yeah, I'm so dark and emo, but, like, yeah, I don't know.
It's emotional.
Because everybody was so in character and stuff, and because, like, the atmosphere is just so, like, you know, and the atmosphere was already created. Like, you'd created such a good atmosphere, and it was already, like, you'd already have the background music playing, like, before we'd get started and that thing. It was just so easy to be in character that I don't really feel like I had to perform anything, really.
I love that. Swept up into a scene.
I know
towards the end I was like because when, like, Ryan's crying towards the end, like, I was legitimately like, oh gosh, I gotta keep it under control so I can actually talk. Because that scared me, because I was like, oh my gosh, why am I getting, I'm getting so choked up.
But that, it was so real and I loved it so much that I would encourage you to like live in it and accept it, and it's okay, and we're gonna roll with it and, like, keep it in, because it's really nice. I think for me, as the GM, there was a little bit more pressure. Not a bad sense of pressure, but, like, it's higher quality. So I know that I need to be prepared in the session prep and the notes. And I know we only have a certain amount of time and we need to hit certain beats. And I'm always looking at the time. I'm always looking at the time as a GM in general. But I knew that's, like, a little bit more stress because there's the time I got to think about. There is, in the beginning when I was trying to include all the threats and the stops and the encounters, I was like, that's too much. Cutting out most of that. We don't have time.
Get rid.
And we did the good old snip on a lot of this stuff, but it helped save time and make everything a little bit more attainable and organized. But I don't hate it, though. It's not that type. It's that type of stress that's, like, helpful, because, like, if you don't have any stress in your life, like, what's gonna kind of, like, motivate you to get stuff done? Like, so it was like a healthy amount that just kind of, like, okay, let's do this. But I love the system so much. And again, it's not just the system. It's, like, it's a system with a mix of the players. It's the GM. It's the atmosphere that they create. Like, I think we kind of hit all those and, like, 5 stars on every sector. And that created, like, a really great game. It's all those things. It's not just a system, because we can play any system. Like, I'm not the biggest fan of D&D, but if I have a really good group and we're having fun and the story's really cool, like, I can, you know, I could stick it out, even though I won't. What I mean is, like, it's mostly, like, if you're having good time with the people and the story's good and the GM is doing a really great job, even though that might be subjective. But anyway, it takes all those 4 things. You mix it all together, and this is what we got. So, last question for everybody. If we were going to do a season 2, and I told you my ideas already, I want more actions. I do want more mechanics.
Like, never stop blowing up.
it won't be like never stop blowing up, where the, like, you're still human, but I do want a little bit, like, tougher characters. It's harder to make in City of Mist. It's harder to do this here. But I do want, like, more actions. I want, like, more mystery and, like, spies and stuff. I was thinking, you know, maybe someone was, like, an ex-SEAL.
What if we were all in the same squadron in the war and we've all been brought
PTSD.
Back together?
PTSD.
Like, we were all in the same unit in the war and we've all been brought back together after, like, years apart.
Okay, the question is this going to be character-driven or plot-driven? That's the main question. Always the main question, right? Because if we're going...
Okay, good mix plot, of both.
Yeah, then you need to run it a bit longer, because
exactly,
if you need to have...
Exactly.
Yeah, you need to have moments for the character to breed. If it's, like, because we can go easy A type of group, or my personal thing, I would like the personal, if we play all old people and go that movie with all of the old action stars all together, not what? Expendables, another movie.
Oh, no, I was going to say, like...
I know what you're talking about. Yeah, I know which movie.
Yeah, with Bruce Willis and Morgan yes. Freeman. I exactly. Red something. I would like us to play that.
Red, yeah. Retired and that's extremely good. Dangerous.
Yeah, I would like...
I'm sure it's Stan.
Yeah, I would like to play that we're all like suffering from arthritis or something like that, and we're all brought back together to do something.
We gotta do one last job.
One last job. And then I can say, I'm retired, damn it. Why did you need to bring me out of my foster? Because my...
If you play Brindlewood Book Bay, I think that you're just that's a little too silly. Yeah.
My point is that the issue is that if it's action drama like Hurt Locker, it's a very slow burn. It's all about the commentary about it. If you want to play with the mechanics, you need to allow the players to be comedic about it. So I said sure. Red is the perfect one.
I'll write it down. Okay, no bad idea. but yeah, so I'm definitely going to play the system again. I don't know when. If it's less production heavy as we're doing now, I could possibly do another player. I think 3 is the perfect number though for this type of game.
Yeah.
But 4 is fine. But 3 is perfecto.
I have 1% in my batteries, so
yes. Yeah, we're finishing up now. I wanted to say thank you guys for being great players. I think we ended off the season really well. Would love to play with you guys again. And we'll keep in touch, okay?
For sure.
About what
for
we'll sure. do next time, okay? Whoa. Okay, he's leaving.
Hello there.
Okay.
Okay, see you guys.
Bye.
See you guys.
Bye.